Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts for you that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and on today's episode of the show, we have a couple of fanciful stories about curses. And I'm not talking about swear words. I'm talking about magical spells. I remember once when I was trying to make some bookshelves out of lumber on the back porch. And at first my pencil kept breaking, and then it started to rain, and then I couldn't get a nail to go into the wood without hitting my thumb with a hammer. Simple misfortune, or am I somehow cursed? Ever wondered that when you can't get things to go your way? Well, in stories, magical curses often wind up helping characters change for the better, or turn them into heroes as they work to break the curse, or at least make them sorry for whatever wicked and selfish ways brought the curse on. And our first story is a fractured fairy tale. That's a familiar traditional tale retold with some new twists invented by the storyteller that help the story say something new. And in this fractured fairy tale, storyteller Donna Washington imagines what it might be like if the Beast from the story of Beauty and the Beast had a fairy godmother, and if the story were told from her point of view. Donna's tale is called Beauty's Beast, and we're happy to bring it to you on The Appleseed. Here's Donna.
Okay, everyone, open your folders. Calm down. Open your folders. There should be a card inside the front pocket. It should be blue. Take it out and hold. Oh, hi, honey. Yours is yellow. Yeah, I know it looked blue in your folder, but it is definitely yellow. All right, this is what you're going to do. You're going to go out the door. You're going to take a left all the way down to the end of the hall. Then you can take a right, and at the far end of the other hall, you're going to find the rest of the yellow fairies. That's right. And trust me, you are not going to be the only yellow fairy in the wrong place this morning. It's okay. Okay. Now, if you have a blue card, congratulations. You have been selected to become a fairy godparent. Don't look at me like that. I did not pick you. No, you're here because for this week's aptitude tests and exercises, you have qualified in this category. You're going to be a fairy god. No, I didn't. No, it's not my fault. All right? I get it. You will be working with the whiniest, most self-centered, most ridiculous people in the planet. They can't help themselves, and then they ask you to give them a wish, which isn't going to solve their problem, and you know it's not going to solve their problem, and you do it anyway, and then later they figure out that it didn't solve their... It's very passive-aggressive. But that's our job, okay? And over the next 9 weeks, you're going to go through exercises. You're going to do all this wonderful stuff. 6 weeks from now, you're going to get your wand. And by the end of this, you are going to be a lean, mean, fairy god parenting machine. Over the course of this time, you're going to have guest lectures, and I am your first, because they're hoping that you will forget everything I say. Because one of the first rules of fairy godparenting is that you're not supposed to curse your godchildren. But I don't hold with that. Some of them need to be cursed, as far as I'm concerned. Some of them need it. No, seriously. What do you mean? You want an example? Okay, No, that won't work. I'm still in trouble for that. Okay, I got one. Okay, so what will happen every year is that you will come here to Fairy Godparent Central. They will give you a list of your fairy godchildren. There's like a list of people, and there'll be a stack of paperwork. You're supposed to fill out one sheet for every godchild, and then you have to go visit them. And you know when you're going to visit them because they start calling out for you in really ridiculous ways. I need to go to the ball. I want to meet the prince. I can't think of anything to do by myself. I'm crying in the kitchen. You know, that kind of thing. And you show up, and they ask you for stuff, and you grant their wishes. Now, some of them, well, they're just pathetic. Some of them are sweet. Some of them are kind. Some of them are kind of rude. But I had one year where at the end of the year, I had a single name left on my list. I had not visited him. He hadn't called for me. I thought, is this the first fairy godchild who didn't need anything? I gotta go see this. And I showed up at his palace, and all the windows were full of yellow light. It was beautiful. I thought, yes, this one has it down. I turned myself into a crone. I do a good crone. And I'm standing outside his gates, and one of the servants sees me and hustles me into the kitchen and sits me down. I thought, look, he's even kind to beggars. They feed me, and then I hear this big commotion. And I look around the corner, and my fairy godchild is standing in the throne room in front of his throne with a scepter, and he has knocked someone down. It's a woman, and she's wearing a beautiful dress. Everyone's wearing beautiful dresses and beautiful masks, and he's yelling. And I figure out that his problem is she is wearing the same dress she wore last year, and he's mad about it. And the husband is standing there, and he is saying, please, we ran out of money, we ran out of money. We couldn't buy new gowns. The prince says, then you should have stopped eating. And I thought, he needs to be cursed. And then I thought, what am I going to turn him into? Frogs, dogs, bears, ravens, I've done it all. But I didn't want any of those creatures to get a bad name from that thing. And I came up with it. I suddenly walked in, and he saw me, and he said, who brought that baggage in? He called me a baggage. I whipped out my wand and I did my thing, and I look good. Because I can put on a ball gown with the best of them. Now, if he was worried about her gown, mine was really out of date. You know, I'm 450 years old. He looked at me and he said, how dare you? He could not read the room. Everyone else was backing up. And I cursed him. I said, a beast you are within, a beast you'll be without, until you can find love and someone to love you in return. And you will be this way for 10 years. And if you cannot solve this problem, you will die. Just so you know, curses don't have to rhyme. Now, it was pretty good. The beast within popped right out. He looked terrible. Big, furry, flaggy thing, black and brown and gray, great big old piercing eyes, fangs. He was beautiful. Everyone else took a big gasp, and I just waved that one. I just snatched his memories right out of their heads. Nobody would remember who he was. And I waved it again. They all disappeared back at their own homes. They thought they'd had spent an evening at a party, at a manor house, having dinner. Nobody even remembered where they were. Waved that wand again. All the servants turned invisible, because otherwise you have to feed them. And they were just hands to do his bidding. And he stood there staring at me. What have you done to me? Well, I fixed you. You were broken, and I fixed you. Remember what I said. You must find someone to love you. Now, you might think that that was a really terrible thing to do, but I learned something important the first time I cursed a godchild. You have to stay with them. I spent 30 years in a pond. Now I'm in a castle. I'm going to spend 10 years here in the library, reading. I left him wallowing in himself. I went up to the library. I cracked open some books, and I started enjoying myself. I didn't see him again for 4 years. He showed up. He was terrible. He stank. He had burrs in his fur. His teeth were yellow. I thought, oh, this is ridiculous. He said, what did you do to me? No one will love me. I said, no one will love you. Take a bath. That would help. Have some respect. Brush your fur. Brush your teeth. Put on your best face. Somebody will love you, but you can't. You have to love yourself first. He crawled away. And then I got this weird fairy tale person itch. The fairy tale person itch happens when fairy tale people are doing dumb things. If you're a fairy tale person, don't have 3 children. Because if you do, it will be a problem. If you're a fairy tale person, don't be really happy, because that will be a problem. If you're a fairy tale person, don't be too much in love. That will be a problem. Felt the itch. Some fairy tale person was not doing the right thing. I showed up in a house, 3 beautiful daughters, a beautiful wife, a really wealthy husband, merchant ships. I sank his ships, sent a fever to his wife, went back to my library. Look, that's just my job, okay? He came back in about a year later. He looked pretty good. He had been doing introspection. Look, I'm a fairy godmother, not a therapist, okay? He's sitting in there going, I've thought about this a lot. I do love myself now, but I don't think I should be with anyone. I mean, what if I met someone and the beast goes back within and I become a terrible person? And then we sat and we talked, and I actually got to like him. He was really sweet. He was a dear, dear thing, And I knew he'd find love because that's how these curses work. And we chatted and we read books together. And I gave him a magic mirror so he could see the rest of the world so he wouldn't go too close in on himself. And I sent him off. He showed up again about 8 years. We're 8 years into the curse. He still hasn't found anyone to love. He's seeing me almost every day. He's saying, I just don't think I can do it. What would I even talk to someone about? I said, you're human. Don't humans have hobbies? Go find a hobby. The gardener had stopped working the grounds. He was invisible except for his hands. Nobody knew who he was. He wasn't working. The prince went out and started working the grounds. And he grew roses, and they were so beautiful. He built a huge labyrinth of roses right on the grounds. I went out. We spent some time together. He loved those roses. 9 years in, he comes in. He's giggling. What happened? He said, ha, ha, there was a man in the garden. I really, what was he doing? Picking my roses? No. Yes. Humans are terrible. They are. What'd you do to him? Well, I told him I was going to eat him. The two of us laughed for 20 minutes about that. I imprisoned him for a little while, but I still had to feed him, so I decided to send him home. I told him he had to send me whoever wanted that rose. You know he's not going to do that. Yeah, I know. But I didn't want to keep him here. We were surprised when the girl showed up. And I recognized her. She was the youngest girl of that family that I had just cursed a little while ago. They stayed in the castle. They were so beautiful together. Oh, my gosh. I would spy on them. They were giggling. They were sweet. Oh, I adored them. And I knew, because curses always end, that she was going to be the answer to all of this. So you can imagine my surprise when he shows up the night before the curse is over and I am packing my things to go and he tells me he sent her home. I said, what do you mean you sent her home? Well, I love her. Well, that's part of it, yes. Why would you send her home? How could she love this? She might love it. I've been watching it. She looked like she was into it. He said, no. I can't do it. And besides, what if that thing happens where I become human again and I'm horrible? That's not going to happen. You're totally okay. I'm not okay. What if it happens? Again, not a therapist. Don't know what to say. We sit together. I'm thinking maybe she'll come back. But I know better. Why would she come back? He starts failing, dying right there in front of me. And I pick him up and I take him into the garden, into that labyrinth, and I lay him out on a bed of roses and I've got his hand and I'm thinking to myself, this is going to get me in so much trouble. And then I hear her voice in the garden, beast, beast. And I'm thinking, yes, yes, she came back. But she's not good at navigating this maze. And he's dying, and she's nowhere nearby. So I have to fake it. I'm over here! I'm over here! And she starts coming through the maze, and then I make myself invisible, and she falls at her on her knees, and she takes this big old paw, and she says, why didn't you tell me that you were unwell? And he puts his hand against her face, and he says, I didn't want you to see me like this. And she said, why? Don't you know that I would always be here for you? And I am in the corner, ugly crying. And she says, I couldn't be without you. And he says, I love you. And she says, and I'm thinking, yes, go on. Come on, fairy tale woman, just say it. And he died. And then she said, love you. I said, you've got to be kidding me. Well, look, I'm a fairy godmother. I don't have to put up with that. I took my wand out. They tell you not to bring people back from the dead. But in my defense, he was barely dead. And I waved the wands and he opened his eyes and, you know, the whole transformation thing, it was fine. Yeah, I was in front of the fairy council for that. But I made the fairy queen laugh so hard she just forgave me. Here's the thing. It's lovely to grant people's wishes. But sometimes your godchildren need to be cursed.
That was Donna Washington with Beauty's Beast. And listening to this story brings back for me a memory. When I was in high school, I took a test that was designed to help me discover some of the things I was good at. Have you ever taken a test like that? When I was a kid, where I went to school, everyone did it. It was supposed to help us figure out the sorts of careers we might like to have. And it was kind of a crazy test. There were questions about the kinds of movies you liked and questions about whether you'd rather go to the beach or a rock concert and questions that made you look at shapes and describe them. And there were questions that tested how you felt about the relationships in your life. And even, it seems, questions about what kind of weather you liked best. I think I'm remembering that right. And on it went. It took hours, and then you had to wait longer, like weeks, for the test to be evaluated. And then I remember it came to be my turn to have a meeting with the school counselor, who went over the test with me, just like he'd gone over the test with all my schoolmates. And together, we unpacked the results. And I remember at first that the things the counselor showed me about the results of the test were things I didn't like about myself. I mean, for example, I was a really shy kid. Shy inside, anyway. I say inside because I did a lot of stuff that non-shy people did. I performed on stage a lot as an actor or a singer, went to football games, did student government stuff, things like that. But inside, I just kind of wanted to be alone with my thoughts. A lot of other people around made me anxious, and I didn't like that about myself. So when the big test looked like it was saying that those things about me were related to things I was good at, it was a little confusing. But as we talked about it, my counselor helped me to see that the way I felt, while it filled me with anxiety about some social stuff, also filled me with stuff like introspection, thoughtfulness, observation, listening before speaking, an ability to relate to people in meaningful ways one-on-one. Well, I had always looked on the way I felt, that anxiety and shyness inside, as a kind of a curse, you know? It was what I liked least about myself. But introspection, thoughtfulness, observation, being a good listener, being able to have good close relationships one-on-one, those are actually the things I like best about myself. There's always another way to look at a curse, it turns out. That seemed true as I unpacked the results of my high school test. And it seems true in stories about curses. And it seems true in my real life, too. Anyway, that's where Donna's story took me. Where did the story take you? And who will you take along?
Live the conversation is guaranteed when we listen to stories on the Appleseed.
There's a lot yet to come on today's episode, but I wanted to take just a moment to introduce you to another one of the shows from among the BYU Radio family of podcasts. The show is called Constant Wonder. It's hosted by Marcus Smith. And in every episode of Constant Wonder, Marcus will have a riveting conversation with an individual whose life has been touched by the awe and wonder in nature, human nature or the natural world. It's all phenomenal. Uncover captivating stories that shed light on the wonders of creation. And you'll walk away feeling a little awestruck yourself from just about every episode. It's Constant Wonder with Marcus Smith. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to Constant Wonder whenever you like. Get a little dose of awe. Constant Wonder from BYU Radio.
Simultaneously laughing, we're all agreed that we love, love, love the Appleseed.
It's a pleasure to be with you today on the Appleseed, and we're happy to bring you another story about a curse from storyteller Paul Strickland. This one's about a cursed knife stuck magically into a tree. And like a lot of Paul's stories, this one is filled with wordplay and gentle jokes. Paul's pretty clever, and you might laugh a bit, but at the heart of it are some serious thoughts about making right what has gone wrong. Paul calls his story The Stabbed Tree. Here he is, recorded live in the Appleseed studio.
Mm-hmm. There was once a knife that was cursed and stabbed into a tree, and no one could pull that knife out of that tree, no matter how strong they claimed to be. Here's what happened. There was once a village, and in that village lived a witch. And this witch was not like most witches are portrayed in stories. This witch was a good witch. She used her magical skills and powers to help the village. But here's what happened. People in the village heard the word witch and panicked, and they banished her from the village. They didn't ask any follow-up questions. They just heard witch, gathered, banished her, and betrayed, thrown out of her home. That witch cursed that knife and stabbed that tree, and no one could pull that knife out of that tree, no matter how strong they claimed to be. Now, that tree was very important to this village because that tree produced the world's most delicious apples. And this village was known the world over for making the world's most delicious apple pies. But when that witch cursed that knife and stabbed that tree started producing crab apples. And what's worse, ocean crab apples, which are way too salty for anybody's apple pie. And even if you are some weirdo who likes salty apple pie, shouldn't eat them from the apples from that particular tree. That tree was nowhere near the ocean. How fresh could the crab apples even be? The village panicked. They tried everything. Everybody in the village tried to pull that knife out of that tree. They started throwing money at the problem. They hired a burly lumber Patrick. His name was not Jack. He couldn't pull that knife out of that tree. They hired the most well-decorated warrior of the region. He was one level higher than a 5-star general. He was a 5-star specific. He couldn't pull that knife out of that tree. They hired a warlock to reverse the curse, and he did. He came along and he did some weird spell, and then poof, they had a giant knife with a tiny tree sticking out the side of it. And that was too weird for even tourism, so they had to pay him a second time to poof, and then it turned back into the tree with a knife sticking out of it, and then they'd run out of money. And then the village fell into disrepair. And then families started to struggle, and then people started to suffer. And generations went by, and generations went by, and generations went by. Until one day, a 7-year-old girl was walking down the path that she had walked 100 times before or more. She was walking down the path, and she reached up. And for the first time in her life, she had grown just tall enough that she could reach up and wrap her hand around the handle of that knife in that tree for the first time. Now, this little girl did not know that she was the great-great-great-great-great niece of that witch who had cursed that knife and stabbed that tree. But that doesn't matter for this story. What matters is that this little girl had grown enough that she could reach up and wrap her hand around the handle of that knife. And when she did, it came out with one simple tug. Because it turns out, y'all, when the time comes, it is easier to undo things that need to get undone than we want to believe. That little girl, she reached up, pulled that knife out, and when she did, that handle expanded into eagle's talons, and the blade fanned into thousands of feathers, and this giant bird flew away with the curse. As those crab apples began falling out of that tree one by one and rolling down the hill like salty tears. Salty tears of regret or salty tears of relief. I guess it all depends upon who is telling the story.
That was Paul Strickland with The Stabbed Tree. Think about that story and about how you might have grown enough to get out from under something you might have looked on as a curse? What are the ways you step forward and, like the girl in Paul's story, undo what needed to be undone? You may have powerful things to say, things that unfold from those thoughts and make for stories worth hearing. Stories, in fact, that it might be important to tell. We want to thank Donna Washington and Paul Strickland for sharing with us today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, and Brian Tanner. Our audio engineers are Ashton Parkinson and DJ Cromarty. The rest of the Appleseed team, Kira Van Dam, Kelly Wormeister, Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. Hey, if you like today's podcast, subscribe, rate us, leave us a review, and tell your friends. That's how the podcast grows. We also love to receive emails. Email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. Your thoughts and comments help us shape the future of the Appleseed. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.